of Southern California. We are so glad that you have joined us for the Last Days Diary radio ministry of our good friend Hal Lindsey. To begin with your comments, there's still a lot of violence in the Middle East.
Yes, a great deal is going on, and as we expected, there would be a lot of spin put on everything. Mm-hmm. But I think there are some things that are transparent. Number one, the big justification for all of these barbaric acts is coming out by the Muslim spinmeisters, and it is that, well, what do you expect from people who have been occupied and oppressed by a nation like Israel? And so, you know, we need to just go back in history a little bit. First of all, under the Ottoman Turks, 1517 to 1917, there was no state of Palestine. As a matter of fact, there was no Palestinian people because they were just sharecroppers who would come in and rent land from the rich landowners who lived in Istanbul. Mm-hmm. And there were very few people there. The place, in fact, under the Ottoman Turks, Palestine became as desolate as the moon. It became a complete, total desolation. Mm-hmm. And there was actually as many Orthodox Jews living in Jerusalem as there were Muslims. And sometimes there were more. And there were just a few poor people who tried to scratch out a living. Then when the British took over that area in 1917, they, of course, began to redraw the boundaries of everything. There were no states. There was no state of Syria. There was no state of Lebanon. There was no state of Iraq. There was no defined borders for Saudi Arabia. This was all just called a southern territory of the Ottoman Turkish Empire. They obliterated nations. Mm-hmm. And so the British took it upon themselves, along with the French in a supporting role, to redraw the map. And when they did, they carved out Lebanon. They carved out what would be Palestine territory. They carved out Transjordan, which became known as the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan later. They made Syria. They, with the stroke of the pen, made Iraq and Kuwait and all of that. And of course, they drew lines right through the middle of tribal areas, mm-hmm. so that you had no attention given to the tribes who lived in those areas, mm-hmm. which created problems to begin with. Mm-hmm. But the really important thing is that when they did this, according to the mandate that Britain had and according to the instructions of the League of Nations, they created a land in Palestine for the Israelites to return to. And it included everything that Israel had, and even a little more, after Israel took over the lands in the June 1967 war. Mm-hmm. That was designated as the land for Israel.
And that was when all of these other countries were actually brought into existence from the old Ottoman Turk Empire. Is that right?
Exactly.
That's what you're saying. Okay.
Exactly. And Transjordan, which simply meant the other side of Jordan, was designated as a Palestinian state. This is where all the displaced Palestinians were given to go. And they were, it was originally envisioned by the British that the displaced people, and they were a conglomerate of people who had come from many different Muslim nations, from Algeria, Morocco, Egypt, the region of Syria, and so forth. These were people that had been flooded in there by these various Muslim people in order to build up a big Muslim population so that the growing Jewish population couldn't claim ownership because they had the most people there. So most of the people calling themselves Palestinian today are part of that avalanche of people who were sent by the other Muslim nations in there to flood the Muslim population into that area. The League of Nations has designated as a place for Israel. They didn't want them there. Mm-hmm. So therefore, another thing happened. And if the Palestinians want to really be angry at anyone, then I'll show you who they should be angry at. The Hashemites, about this same time, were run out of Mecca and Medina, where they had been custodians for generations of those holy shrines. And they were basically the people who ruled the southern part of what we know as now Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. And the Hashemite tribes were driven out by the House of Saud. So here they're displaced, and they start crying to the British, you know, we helped you in your war against the Turks in World War One, and you've rewarded everyone else. Now we're with nothing. What are you going to give us? So the British reverse the first decision about Transjordan, and they put the Hashemites into Transjordan, not just as part of that mix of people, but as the rulers.
Mm.
And so they were transplanted in there, and they became rulers over the hodgepodge bunch of people that were designated loosely Palestinians.
Mm-hmm.
So if anyone took away the state of Palestine, it was the Hashemites.
Mm.
So the Hashemites then became rulers over that. And not only that, in the war that transpired in 1947 through 1949, when Israel became a nation, and it was a tremendous war. Many people were killed on both sides. But in that situation, where finally the United Nations had to that had now come into existence to replace the League of Nations, they had to redraw the borders. And because there was such pressure put on the West by the various Muslim nations, which then clearly had control of most of the oil in the world, they put enough pressure on the West and on the United Nations to where they carved up what had been originally given to Israel into little bitty slivers of land that were indefensible. And that became the state of Israel. And there was created the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. Now, the West Bank had a lot of Palestinians who came. They were either still there, but most of them came in as refugees and settled there, and also in the Gaza Strip.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they had all the land that Arafat is contesting for right now. They had Old Jerusalem. They had the West Bank. They had a big strip called the Gaza Strip. And so they had all of that land from 1949 onward, and yet who ruled over it?
Mm.
Not the Palestinians, the Jordanians. And the Muslim nations never entertained the idea of giving the Palestinians a state. They had complete control of that territory, but by mutual consent of the League of Arabs, they put the Hashemites in charge of what the Palestinians thought was their state. And under the Jordanians, the Palestinians did not do well. They were not good. They didn't do well economically. They were still a people under occupation, mm-hmm. Howbeit under Muslim occupation,
mm-hmm.
But they were still under occupation. And frankly, I've had a lot of people tell me that there was you know, a great deal of the people, like the Christian Palestinians particularly, who say they have done much better under, quote, Israeli occupation than under, quote, Jordanian occupation.
Yes. Yes.
So, you know, it's something that it's like the people will endure almost anything from other Muslims. But if the Jews even treat them better, that's called oppression and occupation.
Wow.
So do you see the dilemma?
Mm-hmm.
This is the clear and apparent dilemma that I see, and anyone who knows the history of this has to see. So now we've got a situation where you've got the greatest contradiction that could possibly be proposed to anyone, and no one seems to grasp it. The Palestinians are crying because Israel shut the doors to what is Israel and to those who are in the Palestinian Authority territories today. They shut the door because of the violence, And the Palestinians are raging that they're conducting economic terrorism on them. Why? Because 50% of them don't have a job unless they work for the Israelis. So they want to destroy the state of Israel, and it's the state of Israel that gives them jobs.
That's a huge contradiction.
I mean, no one picks this up. Here we have the media out there quoting all of the various spin doctors on the Muslim side, and they don't see the contradiction in this. Now, let's say that they achieve what their real goal is, which is to destroy Israel. Do you think for a moment the other Muslim nations are going to let Palestinians have a state? They're not going to let them have a state. And if they do, they certainly will not be successful economically. They've proven. You know, they had the opportunity since 1993 with billions of dollars of aid pouring in from the West to the Palestinians to set up a thriving business if they had turned their energies toward that instead of toward terrorism and toward their unachievable goal. And I'll tell them it's unachievable because God's not going to let them achieve it.
Yeah.
Their unachievable goal of destroying the state of Israel. That in the 1930s, the term Palestinians would come unglued if the land was referred to as Palestine, which they viewed as a pejorative term. In other words, it was a slur to be called that back then.
The information that you just gave out over the air now, I mean, this is obvious historical, documented historical information.
Yeah.
Why can we not get it out to the mainstream peoples?
You know, I really am mystified why we can't. Now, everything I've said is said in many, many more words. I summarized, basically, what you can find in the book From Time Immemorial, which the website WorldNet Daily sells. It's a great book. WorldNet Daily brought it back. It was out of print. And here is a book which... You know, obviously, if someone is a reporter, they've got some smarts. I mean, they could go through that book and comprehend it very quickly. And it's got all of the historic documentation there. She kind of pulled together many, many good reports and things. And there's no question that what I just gave is based on history. It's just amazing how either they don't want to know, or they just are too busy with their spin doctors to want to go find out.
Joan, welcome to the program, and thanks for your call.
How did the state of Palestine and the state of Israel come to occupy the land that they both do?
Okay, how did Israel come to occupy that land first, okay? A man named Abram from... Assyria,
right.
Mesopotamia,
right.
Was called by God to go to that land. He was given unconditional promises that God was giving this land, and he defined the borders to him and to his descendants forever. So even though, and there, this has been reinforced, restated many times throughout the Old Testament and in the New Testament, and I would have to say that of all the peoples on earth, there's only one nation that has the title deed to the land on which they sit. And that is Israel.
Right.
God, the owner of the earth, gave them the title deed to that land.
But it was unoccupied for so many years. Am I right?
Exactly. And if you go to Ezekiel chapters 36 through 39, especially chapters 36 and 37, there Ezekiel predicts their return from first the destruction of the state and the spreading of them all over the world was predicted by Moses 1500 years before it happened. And that is in Deuteronomy chapter 28 verses 63 through 68. Then, if you, and there are many other passages, but I don't want to just overpower you with a bunch of passages, but Ezekiel predicts that they would be returned from this long period
mm-hmm.
where the land would become a desolation and that God would restore them.
Mm-hmm.
And in Ezekiel chapter 36, verses 22 and following, God even says it's not because they deserve to be brought back and given. Because he says, you've desecrated my name throughout the nations where
right.
I sent you. But he says, I'm going to bring you back because of my great name.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you see, he promised. All right, so that's how they came to originally get the land, and that's how they're promised to be brought back.
Right.
As a matter of fact, when God brings them back, as he did in 1948 as a state, it says that's the beginning of the countdown till mm-hmm. the Messiah comes,
okay.
Jesus' second coming. All right, now how did the Palestinians get the land?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, you have to go back to after the destruction of the nation of Israel in 70 A.D.,
mm-hmm.
The land changed hands many, many times. More than 12 different conquerors came in and conquered the land up until around, I think it was around 620 A.D., when the first Muslims came in,
mm-hmm.
and under Caliph Omar, the successor to Muhammad, they conquered the land of Israel, and the one Muslim power after another has more or less occupied that land since mm-hmm. that time, with the exception of the 300 years between the 11th and the 14th century when the Crusaders would come and they fought back and forth for possession of the land.
Mm-hmm.
But then we come to modern time, 1517, the Turkish Ottoman Empire conquered all of the Middle East lands. And they obliterated all countries, all state borders and everything else and just made them territories. And as a matter of fact, the territory, almost the entire territory that is now covered by Lebanon, Syria, what we call Israel, Palestine today, Transjordan, and Iraq, all of these were simply called the Palestine region
mm-hmm.
under the Ottoman Turks. It was under the Ottoman Turkish Empire that the land that we know as Israel, that is also called Palestine, that land was completely desolated. I
mm-hmm.
mean, it was just stripped of all trees. All of the terraces were broken down. It became swamps and just arid land. And then there were migrant farmers that would come in to work the land and try to make it grow, but most of them were never successful. Most of that land that's disputed today as Palestine was owned by absentee landlords who lived in Istanbul.
Mm-hmm.
And they would rent the land out to sharecroppers. And then when the Israelis, or I should say the Jews, when they began to come under fierce, some of the most fierce pogroms
mm-hmm.
or persecutions in Europe started in the 19th century, finally a man named Herzl inspired the people to start returning to the land of Palestine, which is, they said, it's perfect for a people without a land to go to a land without a people.
Mm-hmm.
But virtually, there was hardly any people there.
Mm-hmm.
So the Jews started going back in the 19th century, and they bought land from these absentee landlords and from some of the people locally who had managed to own some things. They bought the land from them at very high driven up prices, but they bought it.
Mm-hmm.
And they began to farm it, and many died when they cleared the swamps. They got malaria and so forth. But against all odds, they began to make that place really fertile and bloom. Then more Jews started coming in. And the more when they began to come in significant numbers, then all the Muslim states around them, around that area, began to be concerned that there were more Jews there than there were Muslims. So they started moving some of their more poor people from their countries into the land of Palestine. And this continued. And so finally, there's a lot of noise in the background. Is that your radio or is that people in your background?
In the background.
Okay. So anyway, this continued until there began to be a real threat of the Jews getting enough people there to actually offset the Muslim claims there. And even though it was not a land that they cherished that much, very few people ever went to Jerusalem. They always went to Mecca and Medina if they were Muslim. But they did not want the Jews to have a significant presence there. And when they started, when the Balfour Declaration came out, and they started talking about establishing a state, that's when real conflict broke out against the Jews, and they began to flood more Muslim people into that land.
Do you know about when that took place?
Okay, it began in 1920 and went through 1923 at a series of meetings at San Remo, Italy. It's called the San Remo Conferences.
Okay.
And so that's where a number of agreements were made. All of the major powers were represented at those meetings. And that's when the British assumed the mandate in earnest. I mean, you know, when they officially assumed the mandate over not only Palestine, but a great deal of other things. During the Ottoman Empire, the area designated Palestine included not only the cities of Jerusalem and Aqaba and places like that, or Haifa, or the various cities on the coastline. It also included, it wasn't Haifa then, it was Akko, which was Akko. On the northern,
okay.
Yeah, the big city of Akko, which was major. But it not only included that as Palestinian territory, but it also included Damascus and Baghdad. So if you want to get serious about, you know, what happened over there, then good grief, you really get into some things, because Syria was created by the British and subsequently given to the French as a mandate. Then the Syrians declared independence and so forth. But if you want to get it, who are the real Palestinians? It'd be hard to find, because the area of Palestine up until modern times included all of these major cities of the Middle East.
Wow. Well,
like I say, under the Ottoman Empire, they didn't have these nation states.
Okay, in Numbers chapter 34, God specifically sets forth the east, west, north, and south boundaries. Okay.
Okay.
If we were to draw a map using these boundaries, what existing countries would be included? Is this a land more or less than Genesis 15, verses 18 through 21?
No, I would say that, first of all, the boundaries are given explicitly in what we call it's misnomer, but it's called the Palestinian Covenant Theology. Mm-hmm. In Genesis 15:18, it says, on that day the Lord made a covenant with Abram. And that's after God took the most solemn covenant possible. I mean, he by himself swore that he would fulfill the land covenant, which says, to your descendants I've given this land from the river of Egypt, that's the Nile, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, the Kenite, the Kenizzite, the Kadamite, the Hittite, the Perizzite, the Raphaim, the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Girgashite, and the Jebusite. So those are tribes that lived in those lands. But my goodness, you look at the extent of that. When it goes all the way to the river Euphrates, that includes most of Iraq, includes Syria, it includes what is now Jordan. It includes probably a great deal of Saudi Arabia, and all the way over into the eastern half of Egypt.
Mm.
So that includes a tremendous amount of land. They've never had that before, by the way, but they will get it when the Messiah comes.
Hal, the question that you just answered in regards to the boundaries of is that of Israel or of the land promised to? Well, it says Abraham's descendants, so I would think that may include Ishmael's descendants as well as Isaac's.
No, because that's made very clear that the promises were all given That's why you talk about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The promises were all given to Isaac. Then it's restated again when Isaac blessed Jacob with them. So it came from Abraham to Isaac to Jacob and then to all of the descendants. So it's very clear. And okay. This is one of the reasons why Ishmael had this 4,000-year-old jealousy and anger.
But he said that God said that he would make those descendants 12 great nations also or something?
Yes, he did. As a matter of fact, more land has been given to Ishmael than to Isaac. So it wasn't as if nothing was given to Ishmael. God blessed Ishmael.
Is there a verse where it says what land was given to Ishmael?
No, not specifically.
Not specifically.
It does talk about from time to time land that he settled, but it would be in many different parts of the Bible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just simply, but God did fulfill that promise. There are independent histories that have been done that show how the descendants of Ishmael spread and so forth. But there's also the history really bears out what God predicted about his nature, which would be passed on genetically to all of his descendants. He'd be a wild ass of a man whose hand would be against every man and every man's hand against him. You look at the descendants of Ishmael, one of the reasons they never became a great people as far as the world is concerned is because they were very tribal and fought with each other all the time.
Sounds pretty familiar.
The only thing, there's only a few things, in fact, I can only think of two things that have ever united them in history, and that only temporary times. One was the Islamic, Muhammad and the Muslim religion. Number two, their mutual hatred of Israel.
Mm. All right, well, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks so much for your call, Kevin. Now, Hal, those who are Persians or from the land of Iran are not... what is their lineage?
Persians.
They are just simply Persians. They have no...
Yes, they are not Arab.
They are not
as
associated
a matter of
with
fact, this. See, this is the biggest problem that people have. They identify the Muslim religion with the Arabs, and yet that's not so. The original people were Arabs.
Mm-hmm.
But what makes this confusion is that the Muslim religion, once a person becomes a Muslim, then it also Arabizes them. What I mean by that is the Muslim religion is so inculcated with the Arabian Peninsula culture and the Arabian language, the Arabian... the whole Arabian lifestyle and everything else, that the more a person draws to being a serious Muslim, the more they go toward being Arab-like. Well, take the modern example.
Yes.
This young man from California who goes over to become part of the Al-Qaeda.
Yes, yes.
I mean, what did he do? He went to Yemen to learn the Arabic language. And the more he got into it, the more he became Arab-like.
Yeah. So we have to make a differentiation between those who are from Iran and are Persians.
Right.
And especially...
You know, for instance, Syrians are not Arab. They're, right. They're Assyrians. Egyptians are not Arab. They're Egyptians.
Mm-hmm.
The Iraqis are descended from the Babylonians.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these are not Arabs.
Mm-hmm.
The original Arabs came from the Arabian Peninsula. And those are the ones that Muhammad gathered around him first.
Okay, the question I have, didn't God give all of Israel to the Jews? You know, the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, etc. And by the Jews trying to give away some of that land for peace, isn't that going against God? And will God ever let that happen?
Well, Mike,
thanks, sir.
As far as God is concerned, he has unconditionally given that land to Israel forever. But they've never realized the full borders that he gave them, outlined in Genesis chapter 17. But he says they will actually inherit that when Jesus comes and gets it for them. But they have the title deed to that land. I don't think that right now God is dealing with the nations the way he will in the future if they take the land. I think that Israel, frankly, has a greater right to that land than the Palestinians. And so if I were prime minister, that's the only way I can put it, based on what I know of the scripture, if I were the prime minister of Israel, I wouldn't give any of it back.
What was it that Sharon told you a number of years ago? He said, there is a land for the Palestinians. It's called Transjordan.
That's exactly right. But, you know, the same British authority that created the nation of Syria out of the provinces that were left over from the Ottoman Turkish Empire, they gave the land, they drew the borders of Syria and called it Syria. They drew the borders of Iraq and called it Iraq. And at the same time, they created Transjordan, which was for all of the Palestinian people to have as a land and a homeland and as a nation. And they also created the area that they called Israel, or that later became known as Israel, as a homeland for the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot more than the land they're even asking for now that was given to them by the British at that time at the Conference of San Remo, which was, you know, all the nations were there. So Israel, even in modern times, is just as valid as Syria or Iraq or any of those others, because they were all created at the same time,
mm-hmm.
at a time when there were no nations there. All there was provinces that were left over from the old Ottoman Turkish Empire that was defeated mm-hmm. in 1917 by General Allenby of Britain. So the land that was given to them, even then, is bigger than what they want now, what they're asking for now.
Mm-hmm.
So they're even in modern times, their right to it is valid. So mm-hmm. it's so ridiculous, it's hard to talk about.
Do you believe this conflict in the Middle East will be a bigger conflict than what is right now, like will it boil over to something bigger?
Yes. Yes, I do. I think that this conflict, it will be temporarily solved. I think it's going to reach such a proportion that it's going to drive the world to extreme measures to try to solve it. I mean, we're already almost at those extreme measures now. But I think it'll get worse. And that's when the Antichrist will come along, and to the world it will appear that he's finally solved it. And that this is the beginning of a period of peace they think will last 1,000 years. And so I really do see this as going toward something much greater.
I don't know if you've seen any of the video of Osama bin Laden today and the smoking
yes,
gun. Have you seen some of it? Comment, Hal?
Quite amazing, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, it's kind of like a bunch of guys shooting a bull and just proud as punch about their latest feat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they could joke about some of them not even knowing they were going to their death, some of the terrorists.
Yeah.
I mean, good grief. I mean, I've never seen such a calloused, almost ghoulish
mm-hmm.
discussion of death
mm-hmm.
anywhere. I mean, yeah. They were just so pleased that so many were killed. And I noted that Osama bin Laden said he was the most optimistic about how much damage would be done.
Mm-hmm.
And he believed that only the part of the building above where the airplane hit would fall. So they were mm-hmm. just delighted when the whole thing fell.
Yeah, what a wonderful thing that was.
Yeah. Allah Akbar. Allah be praised. You know, and they see that as a sign from Allah that their cause is right.
Once those who are Islamic in faith have sufficient numbers in the population to take control, they take over, and then there is no religious freedom for anyone. That's what we don't learn from history. Comment on that.
Here in America, the Muslims want us to be tolerant and to accept all religion, especially theirs, and God forbid that we should suspect any of them from being a terrorist. While on the other hand, in every Islamic country, even the moderate ones, so-called Saudi Arabia, I mean, you can't even have a Bible or open a Bible in public.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of Christians under house arrest there because they dared to say something about Jesus Christ. So there's mm-hmm. absolutely no religious freedom
mm-hmm.
in an Islamic country. And yet they want to utilize our freedoms to the max.
That's
and I
right.
just think that we better wake up. So, you know, I've just been working on an article for the website. You know, the ancient Hebrew prophecies about the coming of the Messiah, the first coming.
Mm-hmm.
And how very clear they are, how established in history that these prophecies were indeed written centuries before Jesus was born, and how precisely they were fulfilled in him.
Mm-hmm.
And when you put this up against the Muslim claim, which is God never had a son,
yes,
and that the Jews took and twisted the original revelation that God gave them, and so did the Christians. So, and yet they claim to accept the book when Muhammad straightens out the errors that the Jews and Christians introduced into it. But I'd like to know how in the world they could deal, if they ever would, deal with these predictions that obviously were written hundreds of years before they were fulfilled in the life of Jesus, mm-hmm. and they clearly demand that God would have a son.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. it really, you know, there's some work I want to do on this mm-hmm. to show how at odds what the Quran teaches is with the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
We believe in debate, not trying to penalize or to persecute or to kill somebody for disagreeing.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't get that kind of dialogue in a Muslim.
Oh, no.
Or even here, I've been threatened with death from mm-hmm. Muslims because I dared to challenge their criticisms of the Bible
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and their criticisms of our faith.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was a threat on a mosque in Culver City of violence against the mosque, and boy, that hit the news quite quickly from our standpoint here. Did you see anything about that, Hal?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
And of course, that's wrong.
I think that
there should not be, you know, this is not something that you either believe what I say or we're going to kill you. It shouldn't be from any side.
I just had you on the radio, and I wanted to ask you, which I'm not quite sure about. You were talking about the Oslo Agreement. You were mm-hmm. talking about how you were mourning for this, and I'm not sure, forgive me, I don't know quite what it is, and mm-hmm. I would appreciate it if you'd reiterate.
Okay, the Oslo Agreement was signed by both the Palestinians and Israel, that they would no longer resort to violence, that they would negotiate in good faith, and the purpose of the negotiation was that on Israel's part, they would give them back the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, and that they would allow them to have self-determination, and and that, you know, if that proved out ostensibly, that would lead to a Palestinian state, but that the agreements would be predicated on the fact that on the Palestinian part, they would forswear any further violence against Israel. So it was land for peace.
Yeah.
And they agreed as part of this to allow Arafat to come into those territories and to set up his own police force, his own government, and so forth. And that's what brought me into mourning. I knew that the moment they did that Arafat would go far beyond the allowance of 25,000 police, which is ridiculous for that small of a territory anyway. But he went to 40,000 heavily armed, highly trained assault troops. not just police. And I knew that that was going to result in violence. I knew they wouldn't stick to bargaining at the bargain table. When he was offered by Ehud Barak, prime minister at that time, he was offered everything he had been asking for. He turned it down and went immediately to violence. That was 15 months ago. So I knew that that would happen. And now the whole thing is disintegrated into just complete violence. And Israel can't get them to even have a ceasefire for one day.
Yeah.
So I knew that would come. And now they're stuck with a bunch of terrorists inside their own borders that can attack at will. There's no way to control them, to attack Israel at will. And this is what I saw coming. It's what I predicted would come.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sad to see that it happened.
The Bible says to pray for the peace of Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do you believe that means? We know there's not going to be any peace right now.
Well, there won't be peace in Jerusalem until the Messiah comes and sets it up. There'll be two Messiahs that'll set up. First, the false Messiah will establish peace there for 3.5 years, and then Jesus will come back and put the whole world in a new world order, and he will establish it forever. But when we pray for the peace of Jerusalem, actually what we're doing is praying for God's kingdom to come.
Ever since 1980, it seems like we have had an awful lot happen to us in the United States. Volcanoes, earthquakes, huge hurricanes, the Midwest floods, droughts. Now we've got the stock market crash. We had the election of 2000, which was great confusion.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, September 11th, with what happened there. Are these warnings to us, or are we actually in God's judgment and facing wrath? And is there any kind of precedent for how long of a warning there would be before God would, you know, utterly destroy you?
Mm-hmm. Hal, your response?
Well, there's only one place where I see a progression. In other words, from warning to from a certain kinds of national disobedience and God's response to it. And that's in Romans chapter 1, verses 18 through 32. And I do believe, frankly, that a lot of these catastrophes that are happening in modern times today are warnings to individual nations and warnings to the people in general in the world that judgment is coming. And it's coming for very specific reasons. I mean, the Bible outlines the kind of behavior that God hates, and that, you know, he says that it will bring judgment. Now, if you say it in the wrong way, in the wrong context, people will get absolutely incensed. But here's what the Word of God says. That he outlines several things in there. He talks about the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth by their unrighteousness. Because that which is known about God is evident within them. And then he begins to trace how a culture can decline in four stages. And first, he talks about in verses 21 to 23 how the person of God is rejected and minimized in a culture. And so the result is verse 24, therefore God gave them over to lusts of their hearts, to impurity, that their bodies might be dishonored among them. For they exchanged the truth of God for a lie, and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forevermore. In other words, this decline is when God is pushed out of a consciousness of a society, and they become completely materialistic. Then after that stage, it says, for this reason, God gave them over to degrading passions. For their women exchanged the natural function for that which is unnatural. In the same way, also the men abandoned the natural function of the women and burned in their desire toward one another, men with men, committing indecent acts, receiving in their own person the due penalty of their error. So, homosexuality when it is accepted as a normal lifestyle within a culture, is one of the final signs that a culture is about to go into utter judgment. Verse 28, and just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer, God gave them over to depraved minds to do those things which are not proper. And a depraved mind means a mind that cannot any longer think correctly, even in its own best interest. It can't make logical decisions mm-hmm. based on what is truth. Truth becomes relative. And as a result, then it degenerates into verse 29, being filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, greed, evil, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malice. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, without understanding, untrustworthy, unloving, unmerciful. And although they know the ordinance of God that those who practice such things are worthy of death, that they not only do the same, but also give hearty approval to those who practice them.
Hey, thanks, folks, for your calls today. It's been a good day, Hal. Here's Hal's toll-free resource line, 1-800-TITUS-35. You can also use your credit card to give a one-time gift. You can request an offering envelope. We'll be happy to send you one. Your gifts are, of course, tax-deductible. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for today, Hal. God bless.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.